Greetings and welcome back to another and ongoing series of Shirim and Daf Yomi. My name is Yitzchak Et Shalom. We are now studying Masechet Gittin Daf Nun Amud Bet, near the bottom of the Amud, where we are going to tackle the third Mishnah, of the Perek, which is grouped together with Mishnah Aleph and Mishnah Bet, talking about the limitations of the use of Nechasim Mishu'abadim, property that has already been sold by the debtor. Ein Motzi'in La'achilat Perot, Uleshevach karkaot. Perhaps it would be instructive to go back to the Mishnah and read. Ein motzin lachilat perot uleshevach karkaot ulemazon haisha v'abanot mechasim mishubadim midnei tikkun haolam. We'll look at the end of the Mishnah in a minute. Well, actually, more than a minute. But the halacha works as follows. Let's say that somebody stole a field, and then he subsequently sold the field to another person. So you can, obviously the field gets seized from the buyer. However, the benefit that the Goslin got out of the field, or that the buyer got out of the field, achilat perot, cannot be seized from the nechasim mishubadim. If you catch the Goslin, obviously take that from him. Shevach karkaot is also the upgrade in the value of the land. Mazon ha'ishav avanot is food given to a widow and to the daughters upon the death of a man. It's not taken from Nechasim Mishubadim, Mnei Tikkun Ha'olam. So let's see how this all plays out. My Tam, what's Amar Ula Amar Shlakish Levisha Enk Tuvin. He says the reason that you cannot exact any of these things from Nechasim Mishubadim is that they are nothing that was written down in advance. Somebody borrows money, so there's an amount of money that's being lent. When that person who borrowed the money then sells his property, there's a set amount that's written there that the buyer should have been beware, should have looked out for. And therefore, when he bought the land, he should have known that amount of money may be taken from him. But here, there's no set amount written down. Amar Rabbi Abba Le'ula, v'hama zona yishav avanot techaman dechtivi damu. However, later on in the Mishnah, we saw that payments of food, the food stipend given to an almona and to her, to the daughters, not her daughters, to his daughters, is something that is as if it's written. It's tanai beitin. Even if it wasn't written, we consider it to be an obligation. Uktani en motzin. So therefore, even though that obligation was written down, we don't do it. Amalei hatam ikara hachiatkun. Ktuvin hein etzel bein chorein, vein ktuvin hein etzel mishuvadim. He says that's what the original takana of Mazon HaIshai is, that they were written only vis-a-vis B'nei Chorin, and if there is no free property left in the estate, then they don't get. V'chenu Rabbi Yassim, Rabbi Yochanan, Levisha Ink Tuvin. He said the same reason. Rabbi Zera Lavasi, V'ha Mazon HaIshai, V'anot Keman Dechtivi Damus. The same discussion took place in Tveria. Rabbi Zera asked Rabbi Asi, how could Rabbi Yochanan say that? After all, Mazon Aisha is considered as if it's written. Uktani in motzin. Mamikara hachi itkun ktuvin hein etzel ben echorin vein ktuvin hein etzel ben shuban. Good. Rav Chanina disagreed. Rav Chanina amar lefisha in ktsuvin. The reason that these payments are not taken is because there's no set amount. It could go on forever. So, Ibaya lehul, Rabbi Chanina ktsuvin uktuvin boy, does he need both for the obligation to be a written obligation and to have a set amount? Is that his one sticking point, that it's not a set amount? But if there was a set amount that wasn't written down, then perhaps he would allow it. So let's see. Toshma. Ditmar Mishmeit v'niach shtei banot uben. A guy died, left two daughters and a son. Now what's the halach in that case? The son inherits, if there's no nechasim merubim, and the girls are fed. What happened? Kadmar shanam natla yisur nechasim. However, each of the girls gets one-tenth of the estate as a dowry. So one of the girls went and grabbed her tenth. And then what happened? Before the second girl got her tenth, the son died. So Amar Rav Yochanan shnia vitra. The second one lost her portion. Rav Chanina then answered to him. It's the same Rav Chanina. G'dolami zo amru. I have a bigger chiddush for you. Motziin the parnasah vein motziin the mizonot. We take out of nechasim mishubadim for parnasah, which is for the dowry, but we don't take it out for mizonot. V'yata mar shnia vitra. And all you're saying is the second one lost her thing. I could tell you something bigger. Now, the main point is that Parnasa, which is a set amount but is not written down, and he says that you do take it out. So, obviously, for him, the main thing is that it's a set amount, one-tenth of the estate. Parnasa the Mekatz Kaitza, Michtav Lochtiva, Vekamosia. So, you see that for Rav Chanina, the one sticking point is that it has to be a set amount. So, we know this is how much is being taken and not more. The answer is not necessarily. Shani Parnasa, dowry is different. Kevin de'it lakola. Everybody knows about that. Keman dechtiva dami. That's as if it's written down. Everybody knows the man's got daughters. The guy died. He left daughters. We know sometime in the next few years, when they reach age, a tenth of the estate's going to go to their needs. Okay, Ma'itu Ravuna bar Manoach. So he says, Meitu. Now, the case here is as follows. A man marries a woman, and he makes a condition with the woman that he's going to support her daughters. That's towards the latter half of Masachik Tubot. Now, that daughter then goes and the widow then divorces, marries another person, and they make the same deal. And therefore, she's being supported from two sides, and then both of them die. So those daughters of the almana are fed from nechasim b'nei chorin. Sorry, v'noteihen of their own relationship are fed only from b'nei chorin. But this daughter, who had this obligation committed to via her mother, is fed from nechasim b'shubadim. Why? Neshi kebalat chov. She's a regular balat chov who collects from nechasim b'shubadim. So now, hacham ayaskinu, what's the story? So here we see that even though it is an unset amount. Sorry, even though we see it's a set amount, which is normally they would have some sort of an agreement to support her for 5 years or whatever it is, even though it's not written down, nonetheless, you take menuchasim mishubadim. So we say, no, what's the case there? Kishakano miyado. That's when they actually made a formal kinyan on this obligation, so that's as if it's written down. So yachibanot nami. So then the man's own daughter should get it, if that's the case. The answer is, they only made the kinyan vis-a-vis the daughter of the salmana. So my paska, how do you decide that was the situation? The answer is, bat ishto daham bishad kinyan. After all, she was alive at the time of the kinyan when he married the almana. She already had her daughter, mahani la kinyan. Bito daham bishad kinyan, but his daughter wasn't alive yet. It was a daughter he had with this woman. Lo mahani la kinyan. The kinyan doesn't work for her. Aye, but milo askin nahavu tarvayu bishad kinyan. But what about a case where they're both alive at the time of the kinyan? Vehechidami, parenthetically, how could that work? Deger shevahadra, he marries this woman, has a daughter with her, divorces her, and then remarries her, and then she makes that condition, so both daughters are alive at the time of the kinyan. Right? So that could be. Ella B, the answer is, why does his own daughter not get minchosim shubanim, and the daughter of the almana does? Ella bito de bitnai beitin ka'achla, the reason is that his daughter is going to be fed by the estate no matter what. That's tnai beitin. So loma hani la kinyan. The kinyan doesn't help to give her a leg up to get from shubadim. Bat ishto lav mitnai beitin kachla, but his widow's daughter wouldn't be fed in any case except for his special deal that he made. Mahani la kinyan. The kinyan works, but that's kind of backwards reasoning. V'chimigra gara. Are we going to say that because the daughter is fed by obligation by tnai beitin, therefore she's worse off? This is the reason. Since his daughter has to be fed anyways, we have reason to think that maybe while he was alive, he gave her something of value that she could sell off for food. Whereas the batishto was a formal rule, it was a formal condition, a contract that he made, therefore he only paid what he paid on time. Alright, so, toshma amram natan ematai, zmanshik adam mekhoshel sheni l'shivchoshel rishon. Going back to our Mishnah, I'm talking about sheva hakarkot. He said that's only when the lokeach bought the field before the field got improved. But let's say the gazlan improved the field and then the guy bought it. Then the nigzal can come and collect even nechasim shubadim. So obviously it's because of the sequence. The answer is tanoihi. The tanya ain motzin achila perot l'shevach hakot l'mozen isha. Our Mishnah, so the issue is that they are not, it's not a written down chov. What kind of tikkun olam is there? The real reason is that they're not ktsuvin, meaning because these things could go on forever, there could be a large amount, etc., and therefore, that's the real consideration. So the tikkun olam, according to Rabbi Yossi, was instituted only because these are things that don't have a set amount, and therefore there could be no end to the payments. Okay, the end of the Mishnah said, "Hamotzi mitzia lo yisham nei tikkun olam." If somebody finds something and brings it back to the owner, and the owner says, "You know, there was more. There was," he brings back a wallet with $50, and the owner says, "There was $100 in the wallet." The fellow who finds it does not take a shvua that he did not take anything from the wallet. Now, Amar Yitzchak, shnei kisim shirin matzatali. Rabbi Yitzchak seems to disagree with our Mishnah because he says that if the owner says, you found two money bags of mine, but here I found only one and here it is, nishpa, he has to take an oath that he didn't find the other one. But shnei shvarim kshurin matzatali, if the owner says, you found two of my oxen tied together, v'alomer lo haya el achad, and the other says, no, that here there was only one and here it is, eino nishpa, doesn't have to take an oath. My time away, the distinction. Shvarim min tachi mihadadi. Oxen typically tear apart from each other, so it's very reasonable that this fellow found one ox who had previously been tied to another one. He doesn't know about it. Kisino min tachi mihadadi, but pouches don't break apart on their own, and therefore, if really the fellow says they were tied together, and this guy says, I only found one, we have reason to think he took the other one for himself. But that's against our mission, of course. Now, shnei shvarim kshurin matzata, but if the guy says, you found two oxen tied together, v'alo omer matzati, v'achzarti l'chad mehen, and he says, yes, I found both of them, I already returned one of them to you, and here's the other one, harei ze nishpa. Alright, so Rabbi Yitzchak, lately I'm also mitzvah leishvam tikun tikun olam. Doesn't Rabbi Yitzchak accept our Mishnah? The answer is, you're right, he doesn't. Huda amar k'Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. He is following Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Tanu Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer, pamim sha'adam nishba al tanat atzmo. Kind of strange statement. Sometimes you can take an oath because of your own claim. Ketzad. Mana lavicha biyadi b'chaltiv pras. You come up to a guy and who doesn't know anything about this and said, you know what, I owed your father $100, but I gave him some of it. Harei ze nishba. Right? Then you would have to take an oath as modu b'miktzat. Kind of strange. V'zeu shenishba al tanat atzmo. And that's an example of what I meant. Chacham omrim, they disagree, eino ela k'meshiv aveda upatur. In such a case, you're meshiv aveda. This guy knew nothing about it. Whatever you're giving him is more than he had any idea about, and therefore you're meshiv aveda, and therefore you're patur, based on our Mishnah. Elazar ben Yaakov, lately, meshiv aveda patur. So now the same question we asked on Rabbi Yitzchak, we say he's based on Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. So ask the same question on Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Doesn't he accept our Mishnah that meshiv aveda is patur? So Amaram b'toano katan. So Rav says, perhaps the case is where the guy who's claiming it is a minor. Katan midi mishasha eat bay. Wait a second, a claim of a minor doesn't mean anything. We never take a shvua in response to a claim made by any one of the triumvirate of legal incompetence of a chereshet of a cotton. So the answer is my cotton. What did Rav mean when he said cotton? He meant gadol, really an adult. My car lay cotton. Why did he call him a cotton? To the gabe mili daviv katanu. Meaning it's somebody who didn't know much about his father's business, and therefore he really could not answer properly as to what was going on, and therefore this other fellow really may be cheating him and not returning everything. So yachi tanat atzmo, but then why does Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov say you're nishbal tanat atzmo? Tanat acherim hu, it's other people's claim. It's this young man who didn't know his father's business who turns around and says, you really owed my father more than that. So tanat acherim hodat atzmo. You're right. Why is it called tanat atzmo? Because another person's claim in your own admission. That's what every claim is. When a person claims that somebody else responds, and then somebody else who responds, sometimes has to take an oath. Modem miktsat. Ela b'der Rabba kamipalgi. Their disagreement is about Rabba's chazaka. Tamar Rabba nei mamra tarag modem miktsat atana yishava. Why the Torah say that if somebody agrees to part admits to part of a debt, that he has to take an oath, because chazaka in adam me'iz panam b'fnei bal chovo. We know that a person is not capable of lying bald-faced directly to his creditor. V'hai b'chulei b'ayid l'michvirlei. Really, this guy should have said, I owe you nothing. But it'll come from yishum den adam me'iz panam b'fnei bal chovo. The reason he didn't say that is because you don't have the ability to do it. V'chulei b'ayid lo delei. Really, he should admit all of the debt. Why doesn't he do that? He's trying to get out of it. Why? He's rationalizing and saying, I don't have the money. I'll have the money next week. I'll pay him. But in the meantime, I'll save face. So what does the Torah say? Put a shvua on him so that he admits it all and pays it back. That's the reasoning, according to Rabba, behind Modem Mimiktsat. So Rabbi Yaakov says that's true whether you're talking about the creditor or the creditor's son. A person doesn't have the ability to lie bald-facedly even to the creditor's son and say, I don't owe you anything. Therefore, when you come back and you say, here's the $50 I owe you, and the other guy says it was really $100, he says, oh, I didn't owe, I only already paid the other $50. You would be mazed, you really might owe the whole $100, and you don't have the ability, therefore this whole psychological sequence plays out, and therefore you have to take the shvua. For Rabbanan Savri, Hilkach La Meshiva Veda, therefore we can't call this guy Meshiva Veda. For Rabbanan Savri, Bohu Deino Meiz, Abab Bivno Meiz. Rabbanan said, Rabba's ruling is only about the guy himself you borrowed from, but his son, you'd certainly be Meiz. And there you would certainly say, I owe you nothing. You'd have no problem lying. The fact that you say, yeah, I owe you 50, means you've got credibility. And you're considered a Meshiv Aveda. It's 50 the guy never would have gotten anyways. And therefore, we believe you, and therefore you don't have to take a shvu. Which means, by the way, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov does not reject our Mishnah. He accepts the notion of a Meshiv Aveda, a guy who just walks up to somebody and says, here's $100 that I found that belonged to you, here it is. And the other guy says, oh, there was more there. Of course he doesn't have to take a shvu. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov simply says, when you generate the information yourself, to this fellow, and you say that there really was more, but I gave part of it back already, means you set up the mode of Miktsat, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, then you have to kashvua, because there you would also have the inability to lie fully to him, even though he's the son, and therefore we suspect that perhaps you are lying and have to take a shvua. All right, we will stop at this point. We'll pick up on the Mishnah on Daf Nun Bet Amud Aleph, Yirtzeh Hashem, in the next shiur, and take us, it'll be a relatively short piece, that'll take us to the Mishnah on Nun Bet Amud Bet, and we will continue in our study of Perek HaNizakin, the fifth Perek of Masachet Gittin. Everybody should have a wonderful day.